south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, still broadcasting from out in the jungle, so the sound might not be up to snuff using a different portable microphone today. We'll see. First, just another little announcement. People have been asking me again when my next Expat Insider Seminar is going to be, and it will be in Guatemala and El Salvador once again. We're thinking about January or February 2024. If you're interested in getting on the early bird sign-up list, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Once again, it'll be a week long and guaranteed to give you a 2 to 5 year leg up or head start on your Plan B. All right, on with the chew. Here's a question that's on a lot of people's minds, people who travel, that is, to Latin America. They're wondering, to what degree is the food contaminated in Latin America? You know, bugs, parasites, dirt, metal filings, whatever. Well, as we all know, food everywhere is contaminated. We're all loaded with plastics, microplastics, and nanoplastics. From what we eat, I mean, you are what you eat, right? Why wouldn't we be, since the last 50 years we've had everything wrapped and processed in plastic? Besides that, people heat everything up in their microwaves in plastic. Just have a look at all your old plastic dishes, plates, and Tupperware. Doesn't look quite the same as when you bought it, does it? All pitted, distorted, and weighs a lot less than when you bought it. What do you think happened to all that plastic? Where'd it go? Well, that's easy. In you, everywhere in you. It's part of your makeup now. Speaking of makeup, that's all artificial plasticized stuff going on your face and getting sucked into your body, too. Doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? And how about all those Teflon-coated frying pans and utensils? Have a look at yours. You'll see, in most places, they're scratched down to the metal. Or where do you think that Teflon's gone? It's part of you now. And 50 years ago, they had the nerve to call Ronald Reagan the Teflon president. 50 years. That's a lot of Teflon under the bridge. Thanks for nothing, DuPont. By the way, there's a documentary out there called How DuPont Poisoned the World with Teflon. How do you like them apples? No self-respecting tree hugger or environmentalist would ever buy DuPont stock, right? Not to mention investing in stock in those evil folks at Monsanto. Yet, if you're one of the millions who has a money market fund, you've probably got money in DuPont. And Monsanto. Not to mention, if you've got a pension as a teacher or government employee, your retirement fund's more than likely invested in DuPont and Monsanto, too. Yep, we're hypocrites. All of us. So, the point is, before you start getting all concerned about how the food is contaminated or could be contaminated in Latin America, look in your own cupboards, folks. Check out your containers, utensils, and your pots and pans. Now, as far as Latin America, sure, on a scale of 1 to 10, most Latin Americans do fail the basic hygiene test. You longtime listeners have heard me say this a million times. When you go into a restaurant, first thing you do is go into the bathroom. Not necessarily to pee, of course, but under the pretense of doing your duty or washing your hands, just to check out how sanitary or unsanitary that place is. Is it scruffy, dumpy, and stink to beat hell? Does it have running water and paper towels? If not, move on, my friends, because the chef and the kitchen crew will not, I guarantee, be into basic hygiene if there's no paper towels or running water. Now, of course, the number one way to avoid the backpacker's best friend, that is Montezuma's revenge, is to avoid street food. Most of those little street vendors, you know, don't have continuous running water. Though they'll start off the day with a couple of buckets of fresh water back behind the grill somewhere. That might be the only water they have all day, you know, to wipe down the counter, for the cook to wash his utensils in, etc., etc. Again, no matter how good it smells, I don't recommend eating street food. Ever. Even if it's nicely wrapped little pistachio or peanut bars. Most of that stuff's made in a dirty little production line in someone's filthy kitchen. Speaking of filthy kitchens, that goes for getting invited to eat at most homes in Latin America, too. So then what do you do when that happens to you? And it will. Getting invited for lunch or dinner by some Latino family, you know. Well, I'll tell you, every time you sit down at the table, you're taking a chance. Because I've yet to see a single middle or even upper middle class family whose kitchen to me or kitchen cooking techniques were up to snuff. I'm talking about hygienically, of course. In fact, every time I hire a cleaning lady, and usually she ends up doing a lot of your cooking for you, I have to show her and remind her quite a few times how I want food washed and sanitized, handled, and stored. You know, some cleaning ladies will use a dish rag to wipe down the counters and the toilet. Bad, right? Well, it could be worse. Some cleaning ladies never wipe down the toilet at all. Now, you might just say Johnny's too picky, he's way too anal about that stuff, but you might also want to know that Johnny hasn't had Montezuma's Revenge for more than 10 years. Can you break that record? Can you come near it? So anyway, the longer you live in Latin America, the more you're going to get invited over to the average person's house. And of course, to be neighborly, you should gladly accept, though be cautious about what you eat. My advice, just skip anything that's not cooked, like salads and liquid juices and pitchers that have been sitting on countertops for hours. Most anything that's been sitting around for hours and hours at room temperature. What about those big-ass plastic pitchers filled with some kind of fruit juice? I guess you could say it's their version of Kool-Aid, some kind of sweetened fruit punch or manzanilla or pineapple drink. And there's a red-tinted kind of fruit punch that's served everywhere. It's got leaves in it called Flor de Jamaica. It's just basically some kind of fruit concentrate with tons of sugar in it. You'll find that served at most every meal. They'll always pour you a glass of it, but I never drink it myself. I just say, I'll have a black coffee, that'll be fine. Otherwise known as café americano. My advice though, tell them, no sugar please, because almost all coffee comes loaded with sugar. The problem is though, when you're in a Latin American home, almost 100% of the time, they'll percolate your coffee in an aluminum coffee pot. And if you know anything about the human body, you'll know aluminum is not fit for man nor beast. It's actually a poison in your body, a noted toxin. And of course, if you know anything about Alzheimer's, you'll know when they dissect a person's brain who's had Alzheimer's, there's aluminum deposits in it. Isn't that nice? I wonder how that happened. Could it be because all the pots in the kitchen are aluminum and every restaurant you go to in their kitchen, the pots are all aluminum and the sauces and gravies simmer all day long in those big aluminum pots? Or as the Brits say, aluminium pots? Oh, and of course, in practically every kitchen in the world, leftover food in the fridge is wrapped in aluminum foil. Every soft drink can is made out of aluminium, too. And for most of your life, every vaccine you had since you were a little tot had aluminum adjuvants in it. Not to mention, 99% of deodorants have aluminum chlorhydrate in them, a very effective perspiration blocker. Have you ever wondered, though, if that aluminum makes its way into your system, ending up in your brain? Just saying. Oh, and by the way, if you get invited to any local person's house for dinner or a fiesta, barbecue, quinceañeros party, you will be exposed to some strange-looking food, like chicharrones, tripe, chicken feet, ox tongue. Oh, and by the way, being that almost all of Latin America is in the tropics, there are more and bigger insects everywhere. You get used to that, but you don't want to see them in the kitchen. Nope, not at all. Unfortunately, though, the hygiene standards in Latin American kitchens are not very high, so the cucarachas set up shop there and the locals abide. They seem to be a fact of life in every single Latin American kitchen, except mine. I hate them, I don't tolerate them, I'm at war with them, and I'm always the victor. If I sneak down to my kitchen at 2 in the morning and I see just one cucaracha man, for that moment, killing that thing is my only purpose in life. By the way, anytime I go away for a while, a couple weeks, a month, whatever, I make up a batch of my famous cucaracha balls, you know. 50% boric acid, you know, that's a white powder, looks like sugar. Non-toxic to humans. Add 50% plain old white flour and a pinch of brown sugar. Add a little water, knead it to the consistency of Play-Doh, make a bunch of little balls the size of a pea or even smaller. Stick them in various places around the kitchen, like in corners and where walls meet the floor. You know, where cucarachas have their runways or walkways. And when the lights are out, they start nibbling. Within a week, no more cucarachas. Oh, and don't forget to put a couple of those cucaballs in your kitchen cabinet, especially under your sink. Now, you might be thinking, if every Latin American kitchen has cucarachas, that means some Latin Americans have microscopic bug parts cooked into every meal and stuck between their teeth right now.
Not a pleasant thought. And of course, in Latin America, restaurant owners are on their honor. They don't have a Food and Drug Administration and inspectors that come around ever so often looking for pests like cucarachas, mice, and rats. Now, I know it's not a subject people like to talk about, but even the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, the rotten liars that they are, knowing what we know now after that COVIDiot crap and the lockdowns, how corrupt the FDA is. Anyway, I'm bringing it up now because here's something else you didn't know. U.S. FDA inspectors, the ones that give guidelines to all health inspectors who check restaurants and such, they actually tell inspectors to ignore insect parts like fly wings and aphid heads, you know, when they're checking out sacks or cans of flour or black pepper, etc. They're told to ignore things like fly wings, cockroach parts, aphid heads, etc., etc., unless they find more than 475 of them per 50 grams of food product. So then maybe we all have cockroach bits stuck between our teeth. Oh, and did you know a food inspection fact sheet from the University of Ohio estimates that Americans unknowingly eat an average between 8 and 12 ounces of insect parts per year. And when I read that, I was reminded of what my grandma once said to me. She said, "Don't sleep with your mouth open, because a spider might crawl in." So then, am I too picky? Am I too anal about that kind of stuff? You tell me, how do you handle it? Could be we're just all better off not thinking about it. Anyway, according to the New World Order idiots like George Cadaver-Faced Soros and Klaus Schwab, pretty soon we'll all have aphid heads and other bug parts stuck between our teeth and like it. So Latin Americans have a head start. Big deal. By the way, I'm sure all of you listening to this show have heard of the dangers of plastics, microplastics, and nanoplastics, and how the molecules are leaching out of all plastics and ending up in our food, water, and air. Should scare the shit out of us, but it doesn't. And as far as Latino awareness of this problem, I've only met two ladies, in fact, Latinas, who have any idea at all that this has been happening. Although a lot of the same news stories make it to Latin American news. Just like Americans, Latinos don't seem to read newspapers or real news anymore. They get all their information and so-called news from idiot fake book twaddle and dick cock news bites. And serious stories, for example, everywhere toxins like glyphosate, you know, Monsanto's Roundup, or nanoplastics in the environment and aluminum. That stuff just doesn't seem to be on any Latin American's radar down here. Over the years, I've only run into two Latinas, who were aware of it. And only one of those ladies was actually concerned about it. The other lady, though very smart too, was a smoker and a drinker, so why worry about nanoplastics? Or for that matter, microscopic bug bits or aphid heads between your teeth. All right, moving on with the emails. Here's one from Keith. He writes, "Johnny, I was constantly wrecked in the U.S. stock market, and now living the good life in El Salvador. Should have moved a lot sooner, but at least I'm here now. 10 years back, I used to get mad at why the financial terms used by bankers and investors were way too complicated. I'd always think they purposely made them difficult for us lay people to understand so that we'd be handicapped playing their game. But now it seems the tables are turned. There is a new glossary of blockchain terms, which I understand, and the average traditional finance guy doesn't. Boy, are those traditional finance guys resistant to change, and that's a good thing for us. Us guys who are into Bitcoin and blockchain, that is. Now, earlier on, when I was living in the States, before blockchain, I had asked my broker why he'd make little bits of money for me and then lose big chunks of it later. On top of that, I'd ask him why he gouged me with fees. He'd talk to me like I was some kind of child. He'd make me feel inadequate and stupid by throwing even more crazy investment jargon at me. I was sure even back then it was designed to make me feel like an amateur, one who'd never understand the intricacies of the big market guys. And of course, that's why the so-called professional money managers exist, to guide us idiot, non-financially astute guys, those of us who've managed to save a few bucks to invest. Then, giving us the impression that we can't make money, or at least big money, without a few intermediary professionals managing our money for us. So they created the complicated world of derivatives, hedge funds, so-called chart fundamentals, which really aren't fundamental at all. For me, the cool thing about Bitcoin and blockchain is that playing around with the concept for a while,
in big or small quantities, you automatically learn things about finance and markets you never heard about in school in Econ 101 or even Econ 401 for that matter. For example, if you read that book, The Bitcoin Standard, you get an education on how the traditional markets work. You find out how they're set up to drain you one drop at a time. And you know what? I got into Bitcoin 2 years ago and I'm up 235%. It would have taken me 20 years to get that kind of return in a decent traditional money market fund. Then he says, Johnny, I heard you talking in a previous show about being able to get 10% yearly return in a CD fund in certain Latin American banks. To the average investor, that sounds great, all right. Except real inflation is over 10%. So if you get into that thinking it's so great, you're still losing money every day. Right now, an email from David. Yep, another Dave. Johnny, he says, you're so right. The press hates El Salvador. Listen to this headline coming from AP, Associated Press, out of the first world. I'm seeing it right in Yahoo News. The headline states, as free press withers in El Salvador, pro-government social media influencers grow in power. Yeah, Johnny, another not-so-subtle attack on Bukele in Salvador. Funny how they don't mention in El Salvador, crime is way down, corruption way down, murder is way down, theft way down, that the people are walking the streets safely again. First world journalists like AP, Associated Press journalists, won't acknowledge that. El Salvador was a dumpster fire before, and no one in the first world cared. It got no first world press until Bukele succeeded. Seems like the first world press will continuously dump on him because he did it without having to suck up to the UN or the US. You have to expect that the US and its alphabet agencies fear that Bukele's methods will spread to other nations as well. And no one will ask the US or the CIA or the NSA for help. And that will kill the flow of money that both the US right and left receive, since for decades they've been eagerly lining their own pockets at the expense of other countries' problems. And in the process, never really wanting to solve those drug and gang problems. Just maintaining the status quo and keeping the money, the bureaucracy, the loans that'll never be repaid and the failed programs rolling along. Funny how the U.S. media never mentions El Salvador was dominated by two political parties for 30 years, ARENA and FMLN. They operated like two criminal cartels out of a bad Hollywood movie. But now that Salvador has a law and order president, it's natural that all the criminals who were there before, feeding from the government trough, and the corrupted media like El Faro, Factotum, and Prensa Gráfica, etc., they're very unhappy with being cut off from the government trough, a trough they've all been feeding off of for more than 30 years. And the only thing they can resort to is crying and whining and fake news. All right, me Johnny here. I was just reading that article he was referring to from the AP, Associated Press. It's just so full of bullshit. Like this. Listen to this. It says, social media was once hailed as the ultimate democratic tool to organize protests, even revolutions across the world. Now, governments from Russia to Uganda and El Salvador are using it to control the narrative. Says, guess who? Siva Gundeski, a political scientist at the University of Toronto, as in Toronto, Canada. As if Canada is a prime example of freedom of the press, a country that totally locked down their people during the COVID thing and locked up people's bank accounts for contributing to truck drivers who were protesting the lockdown. Talk about calling the kettle black. You've got an ultra-woke University of Toronto professor dissing El Salvador when his country is a virtual autocratic socialist state, which unfortunately taxes its citizens slash inmates at the ridiculously high rate of over 60%. Please, you woke Canadian university hacks, spare us your bullshit. You say, as the free press withers in El Salvador? Are you serious? In Canada, the press is funded by the government. You eliminated the free press a long time ago. What are you talking about? Oh, you say you didn't know that? That the press in Canada is funded by the Canadian government? Yep, look it up. The Canadian government subsidizes the press. You know what that means, don't you? You toe the government line or else. All right, moving on. Here's an email from Vincenzo. He says, Johnny, it kills me when people say they're worried about inflation. People in the U.S. complaining about inflation? Come on. Don't make me laugh when my own family members spend $1,200 to $1,500 a month eating out and ordering takeout and delivery. Imagine what it costs in gas to go back and forth in those little putt-putts delivering food. I have family members that spend $10 a day on Starbucks. My calculator says that works out to $300 a month. Man, I don't get it. Spoiled, whining babies. I'm so glad I left the U.S. before Starbucks arrived. Though, unfortunately, they have come down to Guatemala City, where I live. There are five or six of them down here. It took them 20 years to get to Guatemala, but they finally did. That's lag time for you. Oh, and do any of you Americans who complain about inflation, do you smoke? What's a pack of Marlboros cost now? $10? There goes another $300 a month, or $150 if you smoke half a pack a day. Then he says, I know, it's a hip thing to do when you're a college kid, to smoke or vape. But when you're a college kid, or you're 17 or 18 or 20, who's paying for those cigarettes? Your mommy and your daddy, right? You wouldn't be working at Starbucks or McDonald's and dropping $300 a month on a cigarette habit, would you? That would be nuts, unless mom and dad are paying for it. All right, wait a minute. Me, Johnny, here with my two centavos. Have any of you guys out there been to Europe lately? You know, when you buy a pack of cigarettes, Marlboro, anything, one side of the pack has a picture of an active cancer case, whether it's lung, kidney, throat, stomach, colon. It's the law in the Schengen countries in Europe. Every pack of cigarettes has to have a full-color, full-blown cancer case printed on it. And guess what? It does no good. It doesn't help. People still smoke their asses off in Europe. Have you been there lately? Especially in the Arab countries like Turkey. Look out. They still allow people to smoke inside restaurants. They're big on hookahs, too. Ever try it? That's disgusting. But I digress. Back to Vincenzo's email. He says, Johnny, something else I've noticed. Almost every college-age kid with green or purple hair, those heavily pierced Save the Planet types, smoke. That doesn't wash. Smokers who want to save the planet? And where do they get the money to smoke? Just how are they saving the planet? Personally, I'd like to ask all those Save the Planet, green and purple hair types, do you live in a house or a cave? Because did you know that the average American house uses 22 full-grown pine trees? They all had to die to get your house built. Then Vincenzo says, I'm a carpenter by trade, and for the sake of discussion, consider a mature pine with the average height of 80 feet and a diameter of 2 foot. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the average new American home built is 2,600 square feet and requires 16,380 board feet to build. And you'll find the average pine tree's lumber yield is about 754 board feet. You divide that out, makes 22 mature pines needed to fill that demand for one house. But that's not nearly the end of the discussion. Did you know that a single adult tree supports more life forms than any other creature on Earth? For example, a single pine tree hosts 30 species of caterpillars, shelters a dozen species of birds, 20 species of mammals, and a dozen species of reptiles and amphibians. A mature pine tree supports more than 100 species of insects, too. To top that off, the average pine tree absorbs 10 kilograms of CO2 per year. Now, assuming that the standard measurements of tree plantings are about 1,000 trees for 1 hectare, if a tree absorbs 10 kilograms of CO2 a year, the acre will absorb a total of 10,000 kilograms, or 10 tons per year. And according to a recent study carried out by the University of Seville in Spain, it says 10 trees per street will completely absorb the CO2 levels from approximately 10 cars. So, one tree will neutralize one fossil-fueled car's exhaust. Bottom line, Johnny, modern life is complicated, so in effect, we're all save the planet hypocrites. And we haven't even started talking about virtue signaling hypocrites. The phone users are, and they don't even know it. And think of all the millions of trees that had to be killed to clear land to grow crops, whether for human or animal consumption. So hey, if you really want to save the planet and make any kind of meaningful impact at all, live in a cave, hewn out of rock, just like Fred and Wilma Flintstone. By the way, Johnny, all the backpackers I see when I travel through Latin America are Save the Planet types too. They virtue signal that and make sure you know about it. Just get one talking and they'll tell you all about how we're ruining the planet as they text away on their slave labor-produced smartphones, sip a can of Coke, and fidget with the shoelaces on their Nikes that were made and shipped 8,000 miles from Indonesia. So how about you, Johnny? Are you saving the planet? Are you living in a house or a cave? Well, Vincenzo? Oh yeah, I guess I'm a save the planet hypocrite too. I don't live in a cave. But I can tell you one thing. If you really think about the logistics and consequences of living in a cave, the next best thing is living in a concrete house, because you're not cutting down any trees and ruining anyone's habitat. So, gringos, the next best, just by living in Latin America, you're saving the planet much more than anybody living in a stick-built house up in the States, because down here, everybody lives in a concrete castle, so to speak, with very, very few trees killed in the process. Maybe the doors and some shelves and a little trim here and there, but 95% of the structure, concrete block, glass, and rebar. Sort of a cave, I guess. Well, we can pretend, right? By the way, there's some sort of hypothesis as to how the Mayan Empire collapsed and, well, faded out of existence well before Columbus came and the conquistadors came. Cortez came and conquered, but he conquered the Aztecs in Mexico and our well-known friend, King Montezuma, who gave up, by the way, without a fight. The Mayans were already long gone. You knew that, right? Their pyramids and cities stood abandoned. A big, big mystery. One of the leading theories of their demise has to do with their concrete, which was made with high heat, provided by charcoal, which they made by burning forests. They burned down massive amounts of trees and forests and made thousands of tons of charcoal and used that to superheat lime, which they used to make their form of concrete. So when you see all these big pyramids throughout Mesoamerica, huge tracts of forests had to be wiped out to create the cement to put those things together. Have you heard that deforestation theory? I wonder. Do a search. Look it up. It certainly is a strange hypothesis, isn't it? Of course, there are also the drought and climate change theories, along with the plague and pestilence theories. Maybe it's all of the above.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!